From Arizona Public Media, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is the annual Haunted Halloween edition of Arizona Spotlight. We've got a lot of Halloween treats and maybe a few tricks coming up in the next half hour. Be warned, this program is not intended for the faint of heart. Light a candle in the jack-o'-lantern and turn up the radio, because the chills are about to begin. Most of the students on the campus of the University of Arizona aren't too far beyond their trick-or-treating years. I walked among them to ask them a simple question. What's really scary?
This girl's scared of birds, I know that.
I'm terrified of birds. Have you seen the movie The Birds, Alfred Hitchcock, pecking eyeballs out? Bad stuff.
Did you see that when you were young and made a big impression?
Yeah, when I was like 7. I've been terrified ever since.
Have you ever had to take any special precautions because of this fear?
I just avoid them at all costs.
Even like little chirping sparrows?
The little ones are scary too.
I'm claustrophobic. I hate being in small spaces, especially like there's the elevator in the psychology building, and that creeps me out because it's this really tiny old elevator and I don't like dark small places, like even in my room.
What do you think's scary?
Most of the side streets in Tucson at night.
What are you afraid you might find there?
Too much.
What really scares you?
Creepy people.
She's got a big fear.
Big fear.
Can you think of something that you think is scary?
Zombie, probably.
What do you find scary about zombies, though?
All the wound on their face or kind of stuff.
So you'd rather face a pack of werewolves than a pack of zombies?
Yeah, werewolf is more like human, but zombie was like, they can bite you and affect you. You become a zombie. That's what I think is scary.
Yeah. What about you? Do you have something that you'd say is scary?
No. No fear.
No fear.
What do I think is scary? I'm not easily scared, but I guess vomit. Vomit is scary. Probably the only thing I'm afraid of.
Vomit itself or the idea of having to vomit?
Not the idea of having to vomit, just other people vomiting around me. That's pretty scary.
I'm not sure what scares.
She's scared of everything.
This girl's scared of everything.
I don't like horror movies.
You hear a knock on the door and she's running away.
What do you think is scary?
Dog the Bounty Hunter.
What do you find scary about him? There's a lot to choose from.
The racism, the mullet, the leather jacket, and the guns.
Yeah, I would say the wife.
No, I'm not trying to mess with the wife. I'm just trying to make sure I don't run into him.
What do you think is scary?
My boyfriend looks pretty scary when he wakes up in the morning.
What is so scary to you about the Saw movies?
The fact that you don't know who the bad guy really is. The fact that it could be the person next door, it could be the person in front of you.
Holding a microphone?
Exactly.
They say there are only two kinds of people. Those who have some sort of zombie response plan, and those who will be victims. Horror and fantasy author Weston Oakes is an expert on the undead. He says that not enough Americans will be taking the appropriate precautions to protect themselves this Halloween weekend. Weston Oakes, in your opinion, is the zombie apocalypse a foregone conclusion?
Absolutely. I mean, right now it's just in a few areas, but I think it's inevitable that whatever virus or whatever plague is causing this thing to happen is...
And scientists don't know, do they?
No, they don't know. I mean, they can't even cure the common cold, so how can we expect them to cure zombies?
Have we heard any guidance from world leaders, state government? Is anybody really taking an offensive plan on this situation?
Well, the Chinese, they just shut their borders, and there's a lot of people following suit. The problem is that America, by virtue of the way we are, I mean, we have people coming in left and right.
I've heard it said that those borders were not closed to keep something out, but rather to keep something in.
If that's the case, I wish they had closed it sooner.
Here in the American desert, people feel that they have a certain degree of invulnerability to this situation, but what's your take?
Well, of course. I mean, we have an open carry law here. You can pretty much carry whatever weapons you want, just as long as you can afford the ammunition. Maybe places like Chicago or New York City, maybe they're in more trouble, but I mean, let's face it. Out here, you can pack as big as a punch as you want to on your hip, and you can see them coming from a mile away. I mean, maybe you could even play a game of it. Maybe you could see how close they can get before you can shoot them. But let's face it, this is one of the reasons that we moved to Arizona, so that we can have this sort of fun. Not everywhere can people enjoy the ability to shoot zombies in their own backyard and not even worry about it.
What about the word that's going around this year about new tactics from the zombie? Is there a different sort of attack that people should be watching out for this year?
There have been rumors that they are acting as hunter-killer teams, almost like those velociraptors in Jurassic Park.
Oh, no.
In that case, what you might consider is the 1972 Ford response. If you get one of those big old cars and you just drive it as fast as you can into a clump of them, I guarantee you two things will happen. A, your car won't get dented. And B, the zombies will go flying.
And what about the possibility of zombies themselves driving cars?
Well, I think the freshly dead zombie can absolutely drive a car. In fact, I think the way that you'll be able to discern them from the rest of humanity is they're the ones driving slow in the left-hand lane with either their left or right blinkers on. They might even have both their blinkers on.
So everyone, please, be alert. We'll hear more from Weston Oaks later in the show. Now it's time to toast some marshmallows around the campfire. Nothing scary ever happens around campfires. I asked historian and author Jane Eppinga to share a few stories she's heard about the dark side. Arizona has a unique history as a state, and there are a lot of forces in Arizona that people don't fully understand. There's a lot of history here. Native American legend.
Right.
What have you learned as a historian about the, perhaps we should say, the darker side of Arizona's history?
Well, even the ghost stories have the dark side. We have some that are just, you just better get the heck out of here. You know, there's the story of Enrico and Harry, young man, old man, leaving the cantina, and they see this lovely woman coming close to them, and they are full of bravado, and they say, well, she's just a young girl, but she comes close to them, out come her fingernails, and they see that in under her hood there is no face. Now that's about as dark as you can get. But if you really want the dark side, in one of the graveyards at Nogales on the border. And of course, the ghosts are always best where there's a whole bunch of dead people, because that's where the spirits are wandering. But you don't want to go into that area at night, because you will hear the voices, "We are Legion." And Legion, the name, is associated with extreme evil. Now, we used to have a part of Route 666 that's been renamed now, because the highway department said they had to keep in with numbering the roads. But people still see evidence of 666 in Arizona. And 666 is the number of the beast in Revelations. You will find a man walking along the road with a pitchfork. Don't pick him up. You will find a swarm of geese that fly in a V movement. Watch out that they don't attack your car. So the legend of 666 and Legion are perhaps the ultimate in evil. There is one ghost. He rides a lot in the mountains, and he has only half a face. We know that he was a criminal. He was he held up stagecoaches. And if you find his gold, which he has lots of, be careful. Don't pick it up, because it will be todo o nada, all or nothing. Pick it up, another piece appears. Pick it up, another piece appears. Pick it up, and you will be forever doomed just to be in that spot.
My advice is, if you ever do find a remaining piece of Route 666, don't drive on it. I don't think it will take you where you want to go. We all know that there are bones in the cemetery, but most of us assume that they're at least 6 feet under. Recently, some anomalous human remains were discovered inside the walls of a Tucson cemetery. Their origin is still a mystery, so Michel Morisco decided to do some digging.
2 weeks ago, somebody among us thought it was a good idea to drop off 3 plastic shopping bags of human bones just outside the walls of the crematorium. Tucson police don't know who dropped them off. They're still asking. And the forensics team at the Pima County Medical Examiner still doesn't know who the remains belong to.
We have a set of white bones, which are dried and sun bleached, and they have kind of longitudinal cracks in them from being on the surface. So these are.
That's Greg Hess, the chief medical examiner. He spread out the bones in front of us on the table in his office. This one is a femur. There's a couple of arm bones, a shin bone, even a molar.
Legs. And these are the white sun bleached bones that weren't buried and that were on the surface.
Then there's the darker bones, the color of freshly dug soil, bones of a Native American from long ago, maybe, or a settler, or a hiker who got lost sometime around the Vietnam War.
50 years or more, maybe 100 years, it could be prehistoric.
A desiccated femur, the pieces of a child's skull who died long ago, these are the clues to either some ancient crime or a displaced burial site. He surmises that the bleached white bones belong to an illegal immigrant crossing the desert where so many hundreds have died trying to get into the United States.
If you look at the marrow cavity of the bone, you see this fine lattice work of bone that's underneath the thick, more firm cortical surface. You see there's no dirt or anything in there. It doesn't look like these have ever been buried. They're dry and sun bleached. So we would say, well, we'll just make an assumption that these may represent those of a migrant.
So yes, it's possible that somebody was digging up graves and while they were doing that, found the remains of an illegal immigrant. But why drop them off at a cemetery? And why plastic bags, one saying good neighbor pharmacy, the other saying thank you? For 50 years, Bill Addison has been the president of Evergreen Cemetery.
Well, we all had about the same reaction. That was kind of, who on earth did this and why are they here and what are they? And you just sit and think, well, when was the last time that happened? Well, I don't know. I don't remember when that happened. I don't remember having anybody drop any off on our doorstep.
Days later, the Tucson police got involved. Officer Liz Skeens responded to the cemetery. She's been a cop 16 years. This is a first for her, too.
We kind of go through the bag, and he shows them to me. And it was a little odd. You know, I wasn't real sure at first what to make of it because I've never had a call like that before.
She even had to stop and consider if the whole finding wasn't someone's idea of a joke.
My first impression was, well, it's close to Halloween. Maybe this is a joke. Maybe these aren't real. You know, someone maybe is, you know, playing a prank on you guys. So that was kind of my first thought process.
The older bones may go to a museum. The newer remains may be entered in a DNA database to see if they ever match up. The case itself remains a mystery to everyone, that is, except whoever dropped them off.
Stay tuned, if you dare, for more of this haunting Halloween edition of Arizona Spotlight. Right after this break.
Welcome back to a haunted Halloween, Arizona Spotlight. And now Jane Eppinger returns to share the story of one of Arizona's most unusual residents.
Arizona is most fortunate to have a troll related to ancient Icelandic ogres. As you may remember from the Billy Goat's Gruff, trolls have an annoying habit of pulling people underwater. Just how one got into southern Arizona defies imagination, but there he is, Hank the Winslow Troll. Many attribute the essence of evil to Hank, but it just may be that he is lonely, being the only one of his kind in Arizona. However, he really bloodied up one kid, and the story became, "Don't go near the bridge or Hank will get you." He has been known to pull parked cars with lovers underwater. Hank the Winslow Troll has become quite special in Arizona lore. On a moonlit night near Clear Creek Bridge, a reservoir about 6 miles southeast of Winslow, you may rendezvous with this creature or at least see his bubbles in the water at midnight. Be careful, though. He's waiting for you. Teenagers drinking beer after a high school football game have heard his low gurgling sounds and seen his bubbles in the water. One night, Hank gave chase to a high school track athlete. The kid broke all records, but no one was there to officially time him. Those who have seen him on the opposite bank describe Hank as covered with dark, slimy feathers. His head appears to be flat in the front and the overall shape of an egg. Hank's head is also disproportionately large for his body. He usually crawls along on all fours, but when he stands up, he's about 9 foot tall. And he's just under the water, gurgling along, waiting to pull you under.
It has now been 40 years since skeletal remains were discovered on the grounds of the Arizona State Schools for the Deaf and the Blind in Tucson, but the legend lives on. Next, Robert Rappaport visits the nearly 100-year-old campus to take a look back at some possibly tall tales about hauntings.
The story begins in 1971 in a construction trench near what used to be the Hopi Building. The bones were taken to the old University of Arizona Human Identification Laboratory, but that lab was unable to pinpoint the exact age of the bones, except to say they were ancient. Since that time, many people have had stories of paranormal activity at the campus, located on Speedway just west of Interstate 10. In 1995, Gaston Mascareñas and some of his ASDB schoolmates made a short documentary about the hauntings called The Ghosts of ASDB.
Those that could see would also see weird shapes, weird figures. I don't remember exactly the descriptions that they would give me right now, but they would see and hear things. The more common stories came from people who actually worked the graveyard shifts, the security guards. I think one of my professors one day, he was working late as well, and I remember he was saying something that he saw a little girl that would appear sometimes.
One of the stories featured in The Ghosts of ASDB comes from security guard Les Lazakovitz, better known as Zach.
One night just before Halloween, I decided I was going to have a caveman costume. And I was rehearsing my walk. We'll call it a gait, a particular gait that a caveman would have, or as I perceive a caveman would have. And I was hunched over, arms swinging, one leg stiff from a injury with a wild animal, and I was practicing my guttural sounds because I don't think cavemen had much of a vocabulary at the time. So I went upstairs and checked the door on one end of the building, I believe it was the north end of the building, and was practicing those sounds. And I didn't get but 20 feet down the hallway when I heard this voice that really made a believer out of me. It sounded like a very, very old woman. And came over my right shoulder, and it sounded like there was somebody right there.
Quiet.
And since that experience, I don't discount all these stories I hear at ASDB.
Mechanical technician Ray Ramirez also tells a scary story in the video about a time he was working in the old Yuma building. He says when he walked in, he saw mist in the air.
The closer I got, it seemed like the mist started to clear up. And just about when I was in front of it, it cleared up, and I went to turn to go down into the basement, and I realized there's a lady sitting at the bottom of the steps.
Why are you working late tonight?
I'm waiting for my daughter.
And I thought, well, this is weird. But what else, you know, could I say? And she had books all the way around her and paper stacks of papers, and looked like she'd been waiting for a long time. And I'd never seen her before, and to this day I've never seen her again. I went down into the boiler room, which was downstairs in the basement of that building, took a log reading, and came back up. I was fully expecting to see this lady still sitting at the top of the stairs. When I got up from the basement, she was gone. Everything was gone.
Gaston Mascareñas admits at the time he helped produce the Ghosts of ASDB video, he was a bit skeptical of the stories.
Back then, to be quite honest with you, some of the stories I sort of believed, but most I didn't. But as I've gotten older and more mature, I've heard other stories, not necessarily related to ASDB, but other paranormal stories that have come from people that are within my family even. So I've begun to appreciate this more, this phenomenon, and to be more more open-minded in that respect, and not simply discard it.
Even though the buildings cited in the video were demolished a long time ago, the legend of the hauntings lives on at the Arizona State Schools for the Deaf and the Blind.
Trick or treating is a rite of passage for many children, and while sometimes it's a chance for kids to be frightening instead of frightened, the line between the two is thinner than a cobweb. Here's author Weston Oakes.
The small town of Hackettstown, New Jersey, was right out of a Bradbury story when I was a kid back in 1972. It very well could have been Greentown, Illinois, the settings for both Dandelion Wine and Something Wicked This Way Comes. Fictional Greentown was probably meant as Bradbury's replacement for his own hometown of Waukegan, but really, it could be a replacement for any small American town. Green grass, tall trees, old homes, cracked and broken sidewalks, central squares and a park with a bandstand. Kids with bikes playing outside, paper routes, comic book stores, bubblegum candy, and cold Cokes after a long afternoon of playing. The Hackettstown of my youth was like this. It was all bright summer and freedom. Kids playing as frantically and as free as a cotton release for the dandelions of Bradbury's own summer dreams. But it was also dark and gloomy in the forest surrounding the town. The gray slash of river ran through the cemetery like a moat to keep the ghosts out. Mysterious piles of bones were mounded beneath the trees, and birds lay dead from DDT along Main Street. The cracked and broken sidewalks rolled up, people went inside, and only the lost, the lonesome and the fireflies were left to the dark. This was the wicked part of my Hackettstown. It was the part that reminded me, usually not until it was too late, that even the brightest of days can turn into the darkest of nights. I was 7 years old in 1972. I'd made a crystal radio the year before, which I used to tune into late-night AM radio stations. Under my covers, I'd listen to the faraway crackling voices in the tiny imperfect speaker. They'd tell me news of murder at the Olympics and cannibals in the Andes. They also told me stories on Mystery Theater, and on Halloween, they were scheduled to rebroadcast Orson Welles' invasion story, War of the Worlds, originally broadcast on October 30th, 1938, one day before Halloween. I could not imagine a more spectacular way than to spend Halloween reliving a space invasion. At 7 p.m., I was lying on my bed with my comic spread around me. The plan was that I'd listen to the invasion, laugh about it, and during commercials, I'd read my comics. Then, after it was all done, I'd go trick-or-treating.
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
5 minutes into the broadcast, my comic books were forgotten. I was terrified. By the last 10 minutes, my terror had reached untold proportions. Grover's Mill, where the invasion was occurring, was less than an hour's drive south from my town. When I heard the final breathless words of the ham radio operator,
directs to Al calling CQ New York. Isn't there anyone on the air? Isn't there anyone?
I might have actually cried a little. Within minutes of hearing that broadcast, I was standing on a dark, lonely street wearing a woman's dress, high-heeled shoes that were too big for me, costume jewelry, and a wig that looked as if a raccoon had up and died on my forehead. This was my mother's great idea for a Halloween costume. Not another trick-or-treater was in sight. It was 8:30 p.m. and later than I'd ever been outside. Earlier, when my mother showed doubt about my plan, I'd assured her I'd heard that dozens of other kids would be trick-or-treating late. I'd heard nothing of the sort. I just hoped that would be the case. I remember staring back at the front door and wanting nothing more than to go back inside, but also knowing that I was afraid at what she'd say to me. So I hitched up my dress, straightened my raccoon hair, and trudged down the cracked and broken sidewalk of what had become the Something Wicked This Way Comes version of Greentown. I was looking for porch lights to be on, but they were off. All of them. I traveled 4 blocks down and 4 blocks up and didn't get a single piece of candy. By then, the wind had come up and begun to howl through the trees. It occurred to me that it would be a perfect time for aliens to invade, especially when everyone thought it was all a joke. Back then, we used to turn our bikes upside down when we weren't riding them, and now the wind had cut a tire somewhere, causing it to clickety-clickety-clickety past the playing card that was attached to the front prong. What was a cool sound on dandelion wine mornings took on a chitinous, alien character as the night grew darker and the wind grew stronger. It wasn't long before I was sprinting down the sidewalk. Well, perhaps sprinting is an optimistic description. With one hand on the wig, the other on my skirt, the empty trick-or-treat bag under one arm, and my feet sliding forward in the heels with every step, I shuffled as fast as a spastically cross-dressing child ever could. I made my front door without any alien encounters, ran up the stairs, tore off my costume, and slammed the door to my room. As I grew older, I realized the nature of a Bradbury story, that things can have equal parts light and dark. A place or situation can change in an instant. Those places you know so well can suddenly be foreboding. It would be easy to say that it is the nature of the person that causes that change, but sometimes I also think it's the nature of the place, especially if it seems too perfect, as if it stepped from the pages of a book.
Weston Oakes is the author of several books of dark fantasy, including a new collection of short stories called Multiplex Fandango. And now, before we close the coffin lid, we've got time to listen to one more seasonal tale told by Jane Eppinger with some music from Calexico.
One day the devil came to Tucson, and now downtown is very much alive with ghosts. Many years ago, a young Mexican girl asked her parents if she could attend a dance at the Carrillo Gardens. They refused her request, and in those days, parents did not feel they had to give a reason, but they may have had a premonition. However, Maria and her sweetheart sneaked off anyway and danced for a while. When an elegant young stranger asked her to dance, she accepted his invitation. He was very handsome, and where other young men clumsily stomped all over her satin slippers, her new partner seemed very light on his feet. She looked down and realized to her horror that they were floating. His feet were cloven hooves. When Maria screamed, a woman standing nearby quickly made the sign of the cross. The creature, who all agreed was the devil, disappeared, leaving behind a foul, sulfurous stench.
Thank you for listening to this haunted Halloween edition of Arizona Spotlight. On behalf of producers Mark Dugan, Jim Blackwood, and myself, we wish everyone a very safe and extremely scary Halloween weekend. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. I'm Mark McLemore.
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Dr. Scar. See you later, friends.
The party's over, boys. So close those coffin lids.